Welcome back, everyone. We're finally at the grand finale of our Deuteronomy deep dive, tackling chapters 31 through 34. We've journeyed with the Israelites through laws, blessings, and warnings, and now we reach the climax, their entry into the Promised Land.
It's a powerful ending, full of emotion and anticipation. These chapters really tie the whole book together, echoing those early themes we explored.
Oh, like how?
Well, remember how the book started, setting that historical scene? These last chapters do the same, bringing us full circle. And of course, the law and Joshua taking over as leader are front and center again.
I'm seeing that cyclical pattern everywhere in Deuteronomy, almost like a musical refrain. It really drives those core ideas home. But there's also that unsettling prediction in chapter 31, where Moses basically says, yeah, they're going to turn away from God. Kind of a downer, right?
It is a bit of a reality check, but it sets the stage for why the Song of Moses is so important. It's like this powerful reminder, a musical contract that's meant to stick with them.
A contract. I love that analogy. It really emphasizes the gravity of what's happening here.
Dr. Parker had a fascinating comparison that stuck with me. She likened it to I Have a Dream, but set to music. Imagine the impact. Both use powerful imagery and emotion, but a song, it just stays with you.
Absolutely. You can practically hear the Israelites chanting it around the campfire. Yeah. It makes the message so much more visceral than just reading the words on a page.
And this isn't just any song, you know. It has deep roots in ancient poetry and imagery, and its influence is seen throughout the prophetic writings.
Okay, color me intrigued. Let's break down some of those key moments in the Song of Moses. What really jumps out at you?
Right from the get-go, it's like Moses is calling heaven and earth to be witnesses, setting this cosmic stage for what he's about to sing. And then he uses this striking image describing his teachings as gentle rain and dew, nourishing the people.
Beautiful. It's like he's saying his words should seep into their hearts, not just be memorized.
Precisely. Then the song launches into this whirlwind tour of Israel's history, hitting those highlights of God's faithfulness, even when the Israelites, well, weren't so faithful themselves. It even echoes some key ideas from Genesis, especially in how it talks about creation and God's care for Israel. Remember that formless and void stuff?
Oh, yeah. From the creation story. It's like he's weaving together their origin story with their current situation, grounding them in who they are and where they came from.
Exactly. And then it paints this picture of the promised land abundance everywhere you look. Honey from rocks, the finest wheat, you name it. But, and here's the catch, there's a warning woven in about becoming complacent. It's like he's saying, don't forget God amidst all this prosperity.
Oh, yeah, that's a consistent thread throughout Deuteronomy, right? Don't let that abundance make you forget who brought you here and what's expected of you.
You got it. And the song goes on to spell out pretty clearly what happens when you stray from God. Turning to other deities, not a good idea, according to the song. Dr. Parker even pointed out a link to Romans 10 that I think our listeners should check out. Little homework for everyone.
Ooh, love a good challenge. Definitely adding that to my to-do list.
And of course, we see those familiar themes of curses for disobedience. But it's not all doom and gloom. Remember that image of Israel as a vine we've encountered before? It shows up here too, emphasizing God's expectation for good fruit, but also hinting at the consequences if those choices go sour.
Powerful stuff. It's like this constant tension between blessing and warning, choice and consequence.
Absolutely. And the Song of Moses concludes with this incredible affirmation of God's vindication and compassion. Even after all their ups and downs, he promises to avenge his people, to act on their behalf. Talk at an emotional roller coaster. We get their history, the warnings, the incredible promises, and then that reassurance that God's got their back.
It really captures the complexity of their relationship with God, this mix of awe, gratitude, fear, and even rebellion at times.
Couldn't have put it better myself. And speaking of awe and gratitude, we move on to the blessings Moses gives in chapter 33. They're very similar to Jacob's blessings back in Genesis 49, but there's a noticeable difference.
Oh, what is it? Spill the tea.
While Jacob's blessings had some negativity woven in, Moses's are overwhelmingly positive. He focuses on each tribe's strengths, almost like he's passing on these personalized affirmations of God's favor.
That's fascinating. What parts of those blessings really resonated with you?
The one for Asher, in particular, struck a chord. It depicts God as both a dwelling place and a shield, highlighting this constant protection and presence.
Such a comforting image, especially as they're about to enter this new land. Talk about feeling secure.
And it ties into that overarching message we've been unpacking. Despite their failings, despite the challenges ahead, God remains their source of strength. What a powerful way to send them off.
Speaking of sending them off, chapter 34 brings us to the climax, Moses' death.
It's a poignant scene full of symbolism. He ascends Mount Nebo, and God gives him this sweeping view of the Promised Land.
The land he's forbidden to enter, right? Talk about bittersweet.
It really is. And the way the land is described, it follows this counterclockwise pattern, starting from Gilead up north and circling all the way down to Zoar near the Dead Sea. Some scholars think it might be intentionally connected to how God showed the land to Abraham.
Whoa, mind blown. It creates this sense of completion, like a full circle moment, drawing a line from Abraham's vision to Moses' final glimpse.
And then we get those poignant details of his death and burial at 120 years old. It's remarkable how the text emphasizes that his strength was still there, undiminished. What a way to go.
It speaks volumes about his unwavering faith and leadership, even in his final moments.
Absolutely. And the chapter wraps up with Joshua being filled with the spirit of wisdom, ready to step into his new role. There's this powerful statement that no prophet in Israel has ever been like Moses, solidifying his legacy.
A fitting tribute to such an extraordinary life and leadership. So after diving deep into Deuteronomy with Dr. Parker, what were her final thoughts? What did she really want to leave us with?
Well, she had some really important takeaways. First, she reminded us that Deuteronomy doesn't shy away from life's nitty-gritty. It urges us to follow God's commands in every area, from our personal choices to how we function in society. It's not about compartmentalizing faith, but living it out in every aspect of life.
So it's not just a Sunday morning thing.
Not at all. And she pointed out how Deuteronomy wrestles with the complexities of unity. The Israelites were diverse, entering a diverse land. The book offers a blueprint for maintaining their identity as God's chosen people.
It's about finding those common threads that bind them together, those reminders of their shared faith.
Exactly. And she was adamant that leadership shouldn't be about isolating power or creating hierarchies. Instead, it's about serving, ensuring the well-being of the whole community.
A model of leadership we could definitely use more of these days.
Couldn't agree more. She also highlighted the importance of what she called counterintuitive, inconvenient generosity. Giving that requires sacrifice, but ultimately strengthens the community.
Going beyond our comfort zones to meet others' needs, putting the good of the group above our own interests.
Precisely. Deuteronomy challenges us to regulate those self-indulgent behaviors, to choose moderation, and consider the bigger picture.
Well, it all goes back to interconnectedness, doesn't it? Understanding that our choices impact everyone.
Absolutely. And she reminded us that how we treat the environment matters. Caring for it, investing in its health, ultimately benefits us all.
That's a message that's more relevant than ever today.
You said it. And she brought us back to Moses' words at the beginning. We have circled this mountain long enough. Let us get up, go and do it.
Such a powerful call to action. It's about taking what we've learned, letting it inspire us to live differently.
Exactly. Deuteronomy isn't just about acquiring knowledge. It's about applying it, turning understanding into action.
So it's not enough to just talk the talk. We have to walk the walk. Embody those principles of generosity, justice, care for others in our everyday lives.
Now you're getting it.
Okay, so we've talked about these major themes of cycles, warnings, and new beginnings. But what really struck me in these final chapters is the power of visual imagery.
I see what you mean. Deuteronomy isn't just a set of laws or abstract ideas. It's filled with vivid descriptions that transport you right into the story.
Exactly. Like that scene where Moses sees the Promised Land from Mount Nebo. I'm curious, what's the significance of that specific location?
Well, Mount Nebo isn't just a random peak. It's where Moses gets this panoramic view of the land, everything from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. It's like standing on the threshold of a new era, a fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham.
But it's also a place of intense emotion.
Mm.
Moses gets to see the Promised Land, but isn't allowed to enter. I imagine that must have been heartbreaking.
Absolutely. And the description of the land itself is fascinating. It's laid out in this counterclockwise pattern, starting from Gilead in the north and circling down to Zoar near the Dead Sea.
That's right. And Dr. Parker suggested that this might be a deliberate echo of how God showed the land to Abraham. I never noticed that before.
It's one of those subtle details that adds a layer of depth. It connects back to the very beginning of their journey, almost like a divine seal of approval on God's promise.
It creates this sense of completion. Coming full circle from Abraham to Moses and then on to Joshua and the next generation.
And that passing of the torch from Moses to Joshua is another key theme in these chapters. It's not just about a change in leadership. It's about the continuity of God's plan.
I'm curious about that transition. We know Moses was this towering figure, but what does Deuteronomy tell us about Joshua's preparation for leadership?
Well, there's a powerful scene in chapter 31 where Moses lays his hands on Joshua, commissioning him as his successor. It's a symbolic transfer of authority and blessing, and it's followed by the statement that Joshua was filled with the spirit of wisdom.
Okay, that's interesting. It seems like God was intentionally equipping Joshua for this daunting task.
Exactly. It's a message of reassurance for Joshua and a reminder to the Israelites that God's plan doesn't hinge on one person. He's already prepared someone to carry the torch.
But let's be honest, Joshua wasn't perfect. He made his share of mistakes along the way.
True, and Deuteronomy doesn't shy away from that. But despite those imperfections, Joshua remained faithful and ultimately led the Israelites into the Promised Land.
That's an encouraging thought. It reminds us that our flaws and missteps don't disqualify us from being used by God.
Right. In fact, sometimes those very imperfections can become opportunities for growth and dependence on God.
So even though Moses wasn't there to physically lead them into the Promised Land, his influence clearly continued through Joshua.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that we're all part of a larger story, a story that began long before us and will continue long after we're gone.
We might not get to see the full picture in our lifetime, but we each have a part to play in God's unfolding plan.
And those ripples of faithfulness, those acts of courage and compassion can have a transformative impact that extends far beyond ourselves. It makes you think about your own legacy, doesn't it?
It really does. What do we want to be remembered for? How are our actions shaping the world around us?
And speaking of shaping the world, there's one final takeaway from Dr. Parker that I found particularly relevant. She emphasized how Deuteronomy calls us to engage with every aspect of life, bringing our faith into all spheres, personal, public, you name it.
It's that idea we talked about earlier, right? Deuteronomy isn't about compartmentalizing our faith. It's about living it out in every area of our lives.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that our faith isn't just a Sunday morning activity. It should be woven into how we treat others, how we conduct business, how we care for the environment.
So it's not enough to just know the laws and principles. We have to put them into action. It's about doing justice, loving mercy, and walking humbly with God.
And it's about recognizing that those actions have a ripple effect. Our choices impact others. They shape our communities, and they contribute to the overall health of the world around us.
It's a big responsibility, but also an incredible opportunity to make a positive impact.
That's the challenge and the beauty of Deuteronomy. It's a call to live intentionally, to be agents of God's love and justice in a world that desperately needs it.
So what are some concrete ways we can do that? How can we take these big ideas and apply them to our everyday lives?
Well, Dr. Parker highlighted the concept of counterintuitive, inconvenient generosity, the kind of giving that might require us to step outside our comfort zones and sacrifice for the well-being of others.
I love that phrase. It challenges us to think beyond our own needs and desires and consider what we can do to truly make a difference in the lives of others.
Think about it. It might mean giving our time to a cause we believe in, even when we're already stretched thin. Or it could be offering forgiveness to someone who has wronged us, even when it's difficult.
Those are powerful examples. It's about choosing to act in a way that aligns with God's heart, even when it's challenging or uncomfortable.
And it's about recognizing that those seemingly small acts of kindness, generosity, and compassion can have a ripple effect that extends far beyond ourselves.
You know, one of the things that makes Deuteronomy so compelling is that it doesn't shy away from the messy realities of life. It acknowledges the struggles, the temptations, and the consequences of disobedience.
It's refreshingly honest, isn't it? It doesn't sugarcoat the human experience or pretend that following God is always easy.
But at the same time, it's a book filled with hope. It reminds us that even when we mess up, even when we stray from the path, God's grace is always available.
And his love for us never wavers. He's constantly inviting us back into relationship with him, offering forgiveness and restoration.
And that's where the true beauty of Deuteronomy lies. It's a book about second chances, about redemption, and about the enduring power of God's love to transform our lives.
It's a reminder that no matter where we are in our journey, no matter how many times we've stumbled, God is always there, ready to welcome us back with open arms.
I love that. It's a message we all need to hear. So as we continue to reflect on Deuteronomy and its impact on our lives, what are some practical steps we can take to apply these principles?
Well, one thing Dr. Parker emphasized was the importance of being intentional about how we live our lives. It's about asking ourselves, how can I be a reflection of God's love and justice in my everyday choices?
That's a great question to ponder. It invites us to consider how our actions are impacting our relationships, our communities, and the world around us.
Exactly. And it might look different for each of us. For some, it might involve getting involved in social justice initiatives. For others, it might be about being more intentional about showing kindness and compassion to those around them.
And for others, it might be about making more environmentally conscious choices or advocating for policies that promote the well-being of the planet.
The key is to find those areas where our passions intersect with the needs of the world and to use our unique gifts and resources to mill a positive impact.
I love that. It's about finding our own Deuteronomy call to action, that specific area where we feel compelled to get up and do what we believe is right.
And remembering that even small acts of love and kindness can have a ripple effect that extends far beyond ourselves.
That's a powerful thought. It reminds us that we all have the potential to be agents of change, to make a difference in the world, one small act of kindness at a time.
And it's a reminder that we're not alone in this journey. We have each other, we have the wisdom of these ancient texts, and we have the unwavering presence of God to guide and sustain us.
It's encouraging to know that even amidst the complexities and challenges of life, we can find hope and purpose in knowing that we're part of something much bigger than ourselves.
And that, I believe, is the enduring legacy of Deuteronomy, a call to live intentionally, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God, knowing that He is with us every step of the way.
So as we conclude this section of our deep dive, let's take a moment to reflect on what we've learned and how we can apply these principles to our own lives.
And let's remember that this is just the beginning of our journey. There's always more to discover, more to learn, and more to grow in as we continue to engage with God's word and seek to live lives that honor Him.
You know, as we wrap up our exploration of Deuteronomy, I keep coming back to that prediction in chapter 31 where Moses talks about the Israelites turning away from God. It's kind of a downer, especially after all this talk about blessings and entering the promised land.
It's definitely a sobering reminder, isn't it? Even with all they'd been through, even with the promised land right there, the text acknowledges that possibility of straying from the path.
It almost feels like foreshadowing, like a hint of what's to come.
It definitely sets the stage for the rest of the biblical narrative, but it also highlights the importance of those safeguards. We talked about things like the Song of Moses and the public reading of the law. They're not just nice traditions. They're intentional ways to keep the people connected to God and their covenant.
So it's like they're building in these reminders, these ways to keep their history and their commitment to God front and center.
Exactly. And it speaks to the tension we see throughout Deuteronomy between human choice and divine guidance. On one hand, you have the law, clear expectations, boundaries, consequences. But on the other hand, there's this acknowledgement that people will make mistakes, they'll stray, they'll need to be reminded and called back.
It's like a parent setting loving boundaries for their child, knowing that the child will inevitably test those boundaries, but hoping they'll ultimately learn and grow from those experiences.
That's a great analogy. And that's where the Song of Moses becomes so powerful. It's not just a list of rules. It's a story, a poem, a song that's meant to stir the heart and etch itself into their memory. Think about the impact of music. It can stay with you long after the words are gone.
Absolutely. We all have those songs that evoke certain emotions that take us back to a specific time and place. The Song of Moses is like that for the Israelites, a powerful reminder of who they are, where they come from, and what they're called to be.
And the public reading of the law serves a similar purpose. It's not just about individual piety. It's about bringing the community together, reminding them of their shared history and their collective responsibility to live out the covenant.
It's about creating a culture of accountability where they're supporting each other on the journey.
You got it. And it emphasizes the importance of passing on those traditions to future generations. It's about shaping a society that's rooted in God's word, a society that values justice, compassion, and faithfulness.
But even with all that, Deuteronomy acknowledges the possibility of failure, of turning away from God. Is that a sign of pessimism, or is there something more to it?
I would call it pessimism. It's more like a realistic understanding of human nature. It's saying, we've given you the tools, the guidance, the warnings, but ultimately, the choice is yours.
So it's about respecting free will, even knowing that people might make choices that lead them away from God.
Exactly. And that makes the story all the more compelling. We see this tension between human freedom and divine sovereignty throughout the Bible, and it's a tension we still grapple with today.
Because we want to believe that we're in control, but we also long for that sense of guidance, that assurance that we're not alone in this journey.
And that's where grace comes in. It's the recognition that we don't earn God's love. We receive it freely. Even when we make mistakes, even when we stray, God is always there, ready to welcome us back, to offer forgiveness and restoration.
And that's the hope we cling to, isn't it? That no matter how far we wander, no matter how many times we fall, God's love is constant and His grace is sufficient.
It's a beautiful truth. And it's a truth that's woven throughout Deuteronomy. We see it in the blessings, in the warnings, in the laws, and even in those moments of prediction about future failings.
So even in those shadows, we find glimmers of hope, reminders that God's love is always there, pursuing us, drawing us back to himself.
Exactly. And that brings us to our final thoughts on Deuteronomy, the takeaways that Dr. Parker really wanted to emphasize.
I'm all ears. What stood out to you?
Well, she kept circling back to the idea that Deuteronomy is a call to action. It's not just about intellectual understanding. It's about living out what we believe.
It's about taking all that we've learned and letting it transform our hearts, our minds, and our actions.
You got it. It's about letting Deuteronomy challenge our assumptions, our priorities, and even our lifestyles.
It's about asking ourselves tough questions like, how can I be more generous, more just, more compassionate, and then actually doing something about it?
That's the key. It's not enough to just talk the talk. We have to walk the walk. And it's a journey, not a destination. We're all going to stumble along the way.
But that's where grace comes in again, right? It gives us the freedom to mess up, to learn from our mistakes, and to get back up and keep trying.
Absolutely. And as we do that, as we strive to live out the principles of Deuteronomy, we become more like the people God created us to be. We become agents of his love, his justice, and his grace in a world that desperately needs it.
And that's a legacy worth leaving behind, isn't it? To be known as people who lived lives that mattered, who made a difference, who reflected God's heart to the world.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So as we wrap up this incredible journey through Deuteronomy, let's remember that this is just the beginning. The real work starts now.
It's about taking those insights, those challenges, those nuggets of wisdom, and letting them shape our lives in tangible ways.
And it's about sharing what we've learned with others, inviting them to join us on this journey of discovery and transformation.
It's about creating a ripple effect, spreading those messages of hope, love, and justice to every corner of our world.
So let's go forth, not with a sense of burden or obligation, but with a renewed sense of purpose and excitement. Let's be those beacons of light, those agents of change, those reflections of God's love in a world that so desperately needs it.
And may the wisdom we've gleaned from these ancient texts continue to inspire us, challenge us, and guide us on our journeys. Until next time, keep diving deep, keep seeking wisdom, and keep sharing the journey.